Oh, hold up. Smell test. Go ahead. Sniff those pits. Now, your bits. Feet. Toes. Come on. Ugh. Could be fresher, right? It's all good. Old Spice Total Body Deodorant Spray is gentle enough to use all over your body, giving you 24/7 lasting freshness with daily use, from pits to toes and down below. So every smell test gets a... Shop for Old Spice Total Body Deodorant.
Hello and welcome to the Real Vision Daily Briefing. It's Tuesday, February 1st, 2022. I'm Maggie Lake here with Tony Greer, editor of the Morning Navigator newsletter. Hi, Tony.
Maggie, what's happening today?
Finally a new month, which I think a lot of people are excited about. We actually have two big stories we're tracking, though. One of them is oil, of course. Oil prices higher. Oil giant Exxon, one of the biggest winners of the day after the company reported better than expected earnings on the back of those soaring crude prices. And India has edged closer to embracing digital assets and cryptocurrencies. Our man on the ground in Mumbai, Nupan Kalra, has more on this very important development. Let's have a listen.
Hey, Maggie. Today is being touted as a watershed moment in India's journey in digital asset landscape owing to key developments on the policy front. The Indian government has proposed a flat 30% tax applicable to transfer of virtual digital asset. This translates to less ambiguity towards the path forward in terms of regulation. Fears of an outright ban had sprung up during the winter session of Parliament, which can now be marked down owing to the taxable stature. Another important element worth a highlight is that the proposal is for virtual digital assets and not just cryptocurrencies, which expands the cloud to include DeFis and non-fungible tokens. From an investor standpoint, these assets are still not at level playing field owing to much favorable tax rates in traditional asset classes. Reserve Bank of India, the central bank for our country, will also be launching central-backed digital currency. To summarize, it is a positive step forward in this whole journey, and India has embraced the revolution. Back to you, Maggie.
So very interesting development, a lot going on there. And of course, this is just happening, so we're going to be following it very closely. And as Nupan mentioned and alluded to, issues and a positive development on the regulatory front, but a lot of tax issues involved. I know people have a lot of questions about that already. So for more information and to follow the latest coming out of India, head over to www.realvision.com/crypto, and we'll be all over it in the coming days. Now, Tony, back over here, oil very much continues to be the story. In fact, you know, I hear an awful lot of people looking at energy as the place to be in this volatile market. Exxon stock, I don't know where it ended up, but something like 6.5% up for most of the day, 80% if you go back 1 year from now. What do you make of the action here?
That's a five sigma move in Exxon Mobil that breaks, you know, a long-standing monthly trend line. It includes Exxon galloping beyond the 200-month moving average. You know, if you drill down into the numbers, you know, the biggest profit since 2014 with, you know, 205 versus $1.93 estimates. They had their downstream petroleum product sales are up 12% year over year. Oil and gas production all beat estimates. They announced a $10 billion share repurchase. Last year, they returned $15 billion to shareholders. They're going to achieve their carbon neutral plans ahead of schedule. I mean, this sounds like a fossil fuel bonanza going on in Exxon, and I think we just ignited another leg to the breakout.
So just so we know, I know you've been on here, you've been bullish oil, you know, natural resources for a while. Everyone else sort of catching up now. Have you been in or do you like the equities in the oil majors? We'll get into some of the, you know, other commodity markets in a moment. But is that something that you're trading in or that you're recommending for clients?
Yeah, I've been in oil and gas stocks, you know, an overlap trade from last year. And I see no reason to get shaken out of them. You know, if anything, Maggie, I feel like, I just did a fresh reassessment of the oil market, you know, at $90 Brent, and I come up with a bullish assessment here. So, you know, we're going to get to a point where positioning becomes an issue. I don't even think we're there yet because when I weigh the bullish side of the oil factors that I come up with against the bearish side, the bearish side has got a lot of fighting to do. You know, there's a big tsunami of you know, bullish headlines, developments, you know, from OPEC, you know, struggling to build up spare capacity with which they can manage the price of oil. You know, the IEA is looking for record physical demand beyond pre-COVID levels. I think it's really relevant that an Obama judge just literally nixed all the offshore drilling leases that the Biden administration approved last year. So as long as our energy policy revolves around shooting ourselves in the foot on a continual basis, I'm going to say that this oil rally is going to be very much intact, and the dips will continue to be steep in price and very short in duration until we get to a point where everyone's really long, and then we'll have a tumble and we'll get back on our feet. But there are bullish developments under the hood in the crude oil market everywhere I look.
Yeah, so let's, I want to ask another question about some of the equities, but let's talk about that crude price for a moment. Everyone now saying $100 a barrel. Are we hearing that tossed around a lot? What are you looking at in terms of price action? And is that the next target you're looking at, or is it something higher than that?
Man, you know, I'm a big fan of Doomberg, the green chicken. And I was listening to, you know, our interview today, our second interview, and it makes me even more bullish from here. It really does. You know, it's one of those things where the price goes higher and you assess the situation and you say, I mean, $100 is nice. It's 10, 15% higher than here. But more importantly, you know, the developments, you know, from Europe to the U.S. are extremely bullish for gasoline and oil. So I don't really see $100 as any kind of a, you know, as anything but a psychological barrier. You know, maybe if it gets up to that price with some momentum, you let some out there to take profits in front of a great round number. But, you know, more, you know, structurally, it seems like we could be in for something even steeper than that. You know, we've got all of these bullish factors. The stars are aligning now, right? We've got geopolitical risk with the Russia-Ukraine story. We've got the Houthi rebels back droning everything in sight in the United Arab Emirates, likely to take some production offline and at least increase the idea that more of this could happen. You know, the inventories coming into this year for Cushing and across oil products are sort of at the bottom end of five-year averages, if not below it. So, you know, we're going to continue to crimp demand, cancel leases. We're going to continue to have, you know, a huge number of drilled but uncompleted wells, which are the ones that we could go in and readily tap in the need that we in the instance that we needed some more oil supply. And, you know, all of this is going to take way too long to turn around for, you know, the pace that the market is picking up on the upside. So $100 is maybe a nice for a sort of microcosm development target or something like that. But it feels to me like we're going to go a lot higher. It really does.
Yeah, you bring up a good point. I mean, this is a longer term situation when you're talking about supply, and there's been underinvestment for a long time. We have OPEC meeting tomorrow. Do you get a sense that we're actually getting the real deal on what's happening with supply? I mean, would they even admit it if they weren't able to meet supply? It seems like a lot of people think that's what's happening.
No, they wouldn't admit it. I think they would be loath to let it get out. You know, if anything, they probably know that they've got a production shortfall on their hands, and they know that that's probably bullish. So the best thing for them to do at this point is play dumb in as much as possible and let this continue. You know, the headline out of Saudi Arabia today rhymes with the headline that they let out probably two or three times along this rally, and always sort of in the beginning of a new quarter. They're going to raise their March prices for Asian clients, right? So that's something that we've seen them do the whole time, continuing to ratchet prices higher. This is why when Biden turns to them and says, hey, we need you guys to let out some more capacity, they say, I don't think so. And they make up as whatever excuse they want, right? They can source the, hey, you know, we've got a potential continual pandemic to deal with. We've got economic risk all over the place. We've got inflation risk. We're, you know, really hesitant to lay off the gas here, you know, figuratively speaking. And so I think that they're managing it brilliantly. I really do. Unfortunately for us, they're managing it brilliantly, because we'll be looking at $5 gasoline at the pump, I would imagine, by the summertime, if not sooner.
Hey, everyone. We're going to take a quick break right now to hear a word from our partners. We'll be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
With Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot, you can get up to $2,300 off select kitchen packages from top brands like GE Profile. That means you can save on a new GE Profile smart quad door refrigerator that's full of convenient features like a dual dispense auto fill pitcher and an ice dispenser with up to 12.5 pounds capacity. Bring convenience to your kitchen with smart, innovative appliances from GE Profile. Right now, save up to $2,300 on select kitchen packages with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Yeah, and you know what that does, like immediate tax hike in addition to all the other ones we're seeing. You know, Tony, there was a time, and for those who maybe haven't tracked OPEC all along, you know, the thought was that, you know, it's really up to them to determine the price, and they had the supply to put out there. And they would always fine tune it based on trying to find that sweet spot, right, Tony? If it was the price was too high, they were worried about killing off demand. Are we in a different situation now in this inflationary environment where that's not as much of a risk as before?
We are, because we are driving off the ESG cliff as quickly as possible, you know, and the ramifications of that are starting to manifest. You know, Russia just said that they were going to be holding up ammonia exports. And that is definitely a sort of, political shot to the bow for, you know, anyone that needs to import ammonia or fertilizer, right? So that's sort of where the oil trade is coming into the, you know, running into the grain trade, and higher oil prices for longer means higher grain prices for longer. The grain complex is recently, you know, woken up and traded right to its highs. Soybeans are breaking out with the story in Brazil. And, you know, now we're getting to the food inflation point becoming very, very serious, with an overlap of a potential European, you know, gas crisis getting very serious if they run into a period of this winter that is extremely below average temperatures. Mm-hmm. So if they get extended period of cold temperatures there, they've already got a natural gas supply issue, and they've got Vladimir Putin holding, the tap like this, deciding how much goes over there. And so that really paints a little bit of a bleak situation when you, if I may reference again, the Doomberg conversation that we just had. A lot of people are going to starve if this remains, you know, if these policies remain in place and the market price action remains in place.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up, Tony. I'm going to jump in for 1 second because we actually have a clip from that interview that I want to play. We have a lot of questions coming in across a lot of the topics we just touched on, but I want to play a little bit of that conversation around that you had with him around the supply of natural gas in Europe. Let's have a listen.
Awesome. Tony, let me be very clear. The 100-day moving average of the price of natural gas in Europe, TTF, is well above $30 per million BTU. $30 per million BTU natural gas for an economy is a catastrophe. It doesn't need to go back to the all-time highs. The fact that it is persistent at seven or eight times what it costs for natural gas in the U.S. is a total and complete calamity for the European industrial base. Does Europe want to make anything a decade from now? Does Europe want to be completely self-reliant on imports? What does that mean for the strength of the euro in that scenario? What does that mean for deficits, import-export deficits? This is a total and complete calamity. At $30 per million BTU natural gas, the European manufacturing sector is effectively acquiring a critical input into its economy at an oil per barrel, you know, dollars per barrel price of oil equivalent of what, $200 for oil? And in the U.S., as we're talking, I'm looking at, NG1 pricing it at $4 per million BTU. It just doesn't compute. If energy is life and energy is 7.5 times more expensive in Europe, there's going to have to be a lot less life.
Yeah.
It just, you have really eventually, it has to, the circles have to be squared, as we would say. So this is a catastrophe. It doesn't need to go back to the all-time highs. The spike is here. It's real. It's going to be pushed through.
Tony, fantastic conversation, and so worrying for anyone who's sitting in Europe and we watch this happen. The spike is here. It's real.
Oh, it's real, Maggie. You know, I tell you, you know, in addition, what was even better than rewatching myself and Doomberg and getting, you know, great bits like that is that I'm listening to the Joe Rogan, Jordan Peterson podcast. And, you know, I'm listening to them go into an environmental and very much energy conversation. And I'm starting to get excited because, you know, Joe Rogan's got 40 million listeners, whereas Doomberg and I have who knows how many listeners. But more importantly, when someone like Joe Rogan is interviewing Jordan Peterson, who is making quotes like this, I get very excited that the idea that we are in that the poor, at least, are in some kind of danger. Listen to this for a minute. That's the old saying, when the aristocracy gets a cold, the working class dies of pneumonia. It's okay, so fine, increase energy costs. Well, what happens? A bunch of poor people fall off the map, like a bunch of them. Right? And so the more you increase energy costs, the more that happens. And so if the price we have to pay to move towards sustainable environment is increased energy costs, and it really isn't, because that's a policy decision, it doesn't have to be that way. That is absolutely 100% and an inevitable consequence that what we are doing is sacrificing the poor here.
Yeah, so and really that's spreading through so many conversations now that we have around inflation, around Fed policy, you know, and I don't think it's going to go away anytime soon.
It's important that an audience as big as Joe Rogan is hearing things like that, because that'll start to socialize the idea that, you know, this isn't exactly, you know, it may be the most virtuous policy we can think of. It's definitely not the best way to transfer off of carbon.
Yeah. Tony, we got some questions coming in. So let's try to get through a few of them. And I want to start with Christopher's. And he's asking from the exchange, how do you explain the continued backwardation in the oil futures curve? On the one hand, one would imagine higher rates to raise costs of production might flatten the curve. On the other, Cushing inventory is surprisingly low. What do you make of this?
Yeah, it's all about the Cushing inventory being low. You know, don't look for interest rates going higher to cause anybody or any industrial to make the decision to not buy gasoline. You know, that gasoline is the power that sustains every industry, and it is very much inelastic in price to the industrial company. It may be elastic in price to the consumer, but I'd argue that below $5 a gallon or so, you know, we're not really digging that hard into gas demand, you know, fuel demand here. So I would tend to stay away from, you know, looking for interest rates to affect the oil price right now, especially when we're heading into a period of extremely low supply and, you know, record demand. That really, for me, is going to be the overlying driver of oil prices. And I think that the, you know, one of the few things standing in the way of much higher oil prices, given all the policy decision that has been very carefully lined up to cause higher oil prices, you know, I think we're a long way from those gears turning around, let's say. So right now the gears are in motion to push us to much higher oil prices, even from last sale. I'm really pretty confident about that.
Ross on the exchange, I think we talked a little bit about, you know, some of the price action that you're looking at, which could easily go above 100. But Ross on the exchange asking this question, if inflation generally remains sticky, will this provide a higher floor in the oil price when it does come off its peak, or is it all about the rate of change of inflation?
Well, there's a little bit of to unpack there. You know, When I look at sort of when I look at January's performance, let me just take a step back, Maggie, to answer this question. And I noticed that the only sectors that rallied in January was the energy, oil and gas sector, right? With the XLE up 19%, and I think XOP was up 11%. Every other sector, pretty much in the S&P 500, was off in January, led by technology, led by big technology and the FANG stocks, which came off 10% as a group. You know, that's the sort of rotation that I'm looking for, and I'm looking for it to continue, right? The energy traders have not been bucked off the, you know, the bull run from any de-risking in the equity market. It's only creating a more bullish, as you can see, a more bullish scenario in the energy equities. And to me, that's the story that is going to drive this year's natural resources trading. You know, and I feel I've been saying going into the year, I've said this earlier, going into January, and I'll say this going into February, since January just proved it, we are in a position now where the only stocks in the S&P that have got an edge here in the world of rising rates, where the two-year yield leaps 30, 40 basis points a month, the only game in town is energy stocks. And it might be like that all year. We may have 12 consecutive months where tech is negative and energy is positive. Now, I know that that might be an outlier and a low probability, but at least I get odds and I'd put a bet down on that happening any day.
I laugh because I feel like every time we do questions, we're always going to get a question about Freeport MacMoran. I don't know why, Tony. I guess I know they know you know it well, but Achilles on the exchange is asking, do you like FCX at these levels? Looks like it's range bound between 35 and 46.
Well, I've got to be a disciplined trader. I do like Freeport MacMoran at these levels. I got bucked out of a trade on it recently, so I kind of have to keep my mouth shut a little bit. I bought that last breakout above 40. We got up to 46, and I just raised my stop to break even and had to pass out of it. But, you know, that's kind of the modus operandi for how I stay alive over the last 30 years since that strategy has served me properly. I'm kind of prowling around looking to get back in, but I'll be honest with you. Copper seems to have a problem right now, and I don't know exactly what it is. But, you know, going into this whole, carbon emissions and pivot to electronic vehicles, copper should be performing a lot better than it is right now, especially the fact that it's sitting on all-time highs with record low inventories. So you would think that over time, the copper price would start trending. And then you look over at the copper chart and see that it's been consolidating for over a year now and really has not made any material upside advance. So if copper is going to remain range bound during this, pivot to ESG and carbon neutral and electronic cars, I'm a little bit nervous that we might not get the performance out of Freeport that I was hoping for. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the more and more I sort of get bucked off the same trade, the more I'm likely to move my money to something that's getting treated a little bit better. And that to me so far would be something in the energy sector, or maybe where I can buy something that's so extraordinarily cheap right now, like cannabis stocks. I'd rather rotate into something like that, if that's fair to say.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned that, Tony, because cannabis has come. I know it's a sector you follow closely. We've talked about it in the past. I've heard it coming up again and again, even in a conversation where people feel reluctant to step in aggressively and buy or bargain hunt, which you can tell me your thoughts on that, because we've been hearing from a lot of people coming on our air that, you know, last Monday may have been a bottom, but they're not convinced it was the bottom, and they're still a little worried. But I hear people talking about cannabis, a couple different people, both on our air and other platforms. What's happening there? Do you think it's just that they were beaten down so much, or is there a change in fundamentals we need to know about?
Well, if a year ago, Maggie, if you remember, cannabis was breaking out to new highs. MSOS was literally chugging toward, let me just put the chart up here, chugging north of 55. And we were all guilty probably of high-fiving about a new hashtag we created called the MSO gang. Because all of a sudden the US multi-state operators were just bid only for weeks at a time. And everybody that's in the sector is like looking at each other saying, this is it, right? This is it. And you know, we thought they were never gonna come back. And so what you have to remember that whenever you're high-fiving with one hand, you have to be making sales with the other hand. And so now we know we can turn that story on its head. Back then, we were looking ahead to the Safe Banking Act being passed. Obviously, the federal government has dragged its feet for over a year on that. And here we are with the MSOS ETF halved from where we were in February. Now, what's attractive to me is sentiment is easily as negative now as it was positive a year ago. The valuation is even cheaper. You've got the chance to, buy some of the best growth potential stocks and cheapest value stocks in the market, all in the same sector. So that's definitely something where I am going to begin taking swings again from the long side, especially down here at the IPO MSO price of that ETF, mm-hmm. where, over history, sometimes that level continues to hold. And now all of a sudden we've got some large magnitude moves off the bottom. And I would imagine that, as you can see, after a year of price action like this, nobody's left long these things. So you have a lot of opportunity to really, you know, try to carry the torch from the long side. But I think that once we get safe banking passed, what will happen is the market will get thick with institutional players.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And therefore, when the institutional player wants to be in a sector, you know, they see that's, you know, the big plain vanilla who's got a 20-year time frame sees that sector off 20% and they're an automatic buyer. And yeah, that sector off another 10 or 20% from there, and they're an automatic buyer again for another time frame. And so, yeah, you know, there's a lot of that that thickens up the bid in the cannabis market in that sector that really just was not there for all of last year. It was very much a game of hedge fund hot potato. And, you know, it got ugly into the tax loss selling in the end of the year. And it looks like we may be having a rebirth of the sector here. But until safe banking passes and it becomes full, you know, full and fair game for every institution out there, we're going to have air pockets like this. And sometimes they last longer than we hope for.
Yeah. Great rundown on so many fronts on that, Tony. Fantastic thoughts about institutional. I'm sure that a lot of people are going to take that on board and they're thinking it. And it's always great for us that you bring that trading strategy in, because, you know, people do get convicted, and it is hard when you see those gains to be really disciplined about taking your profits when you're winning and also protecting yourself on the downside. So totally appreciate that.
What's been great, Maggie, is fundamentally, just really quick, you know, we've interviewed about five or six cannabis CEOs, and the common denominator, you know, they're frustrated with the stock price, but they are not letting the stock price kill them because they're so busy building up operations. And it feels like it might be a case of, you know, you can pay me now or you can pay us more later. And so we'll see if that's the case. I just wanted to add that in. The CEOs
It is great. And this is ahead. This is an area where you do catch up with a lot of them and interview a lot of them. So I encourage everyone to check that out, because you've been doing a fantastic job on that front. And absolutely, I mean, for years, institutional people that I've been talking to are just waiting for the banking rules to change. They are absolutely on the sidelines, kind of ring fencing this and just waiting. So it's going to be a fun patch to watch. We have a couple more really good questions. I want to try to get to them. We have Roger asking, is there more downside in uranium? On the exchange,
Uranium is really tough. I continue to shy away from writing about uranium, although I am invested in the Sprott Physical Trust and URA, the uranium ETF, in small enough. These are kind of investment positions that are rare for me. There are positions that aren't big enough to hurt my portfolio in any way, but I'm there representationally because for me, that is a ESG failure trade where we're kind of have to pivot toward nuclear energy, which is, you know, everything about it. We've been sort of sold the wrong story over the years. And, you know, now that we can effectively clean up nuclear waste without too much of a problem, it becomes a lot more viable of an option. But the problem that I have with is that I don't have the price transparency in the uranium markets that I have in the gold market and the crude oil market and the other commodities that I'm really comfortable with. So unless I can overlay that kind of science into that sector, it's really hard for me to speak with a lot of confidence about it, because, as you know, the things that give me confidence are the things that I've been observing for years in the markets. So now I'm kind of letting the uranium bulls have their day. Guys like Harris Kupperman, you know, Doomberg is exceedingly bullish in uranium. And for me, it's like the biggest disappointment is that, you know, we've got that big unrest situation in Kazakhstan, and you look over and the uranium price really didn't move. And so if the world isn't afraid of Kazakhstan, you know, failing to deliver uranium or for whatever, you know, trauma the country is going through, then clearly it's not a big enough issue to worry about then, right? So maybe that's keeping prices in line. But I think over time, I think it's going to take a sort of political headline and an admission that nuclear is necessary to really light that fuse, if that's fair to say. For now, I think it's a matter of jockeying and probably some hedge fund hot potato with positioning. But fundamentally, the market is definitely intact, and the Sprott ETF is healthy, growing, and expanding its uranium assets. So I think this is a story that you have to continue to stay on.
We're going to take another quick break to hear a word from our partners. We'll be right back with more of the day's top analysis on The Real Vision Daily Briefing.
This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
Yeah, gosh, we have so many great questions today. I'm going to save some of them for next time, Tony, but I want to squeeze one more in from Jim. And we touched on this in the beginning. Jim on the exchange is asking, are energy stocks catching up to oil and nat gas stocks? Some of them, he points out a few that were flat today, but equities rallied, possibly along with XOM. He's talking about BZ, CL, and NG. I don't know if you're familiar with any of them, but I guess he's asking, is there going to be sort of a lagging rally in some of those energy stocks as we see those natural resource prices continue to rocket higher?
Well, I take a snapshot of the S&P at the end of every year, Maggie, and at the end of last year, technology was 27.6% of the S&P and energy is 2.3%. So with energy being recurringly now for several years, the smallest percentage of the S&P that it's been, it sure seems like this is the time that is all going to change. It sure seems like when we're heading into a changing rate regime, when we've got actual commodity inflation, which is underpinned by an unbelievably policy-driven bull story and bull narrative in oil, you have to think that this is going to be the time that oil stocks are going to start to expand. And then you go ahead and get a report like we got out of Exxon today, which was like, the immaculate earnings price per share report. It couldn't have been any better across any matrix, I don't think. And, for me, it may continue to take long to play out. But it feels like this is the one, as in, this is the year where the energy sector is going to be, start growing and maybe become a much bigger market cap sector of the S&P, while technology maybe finally takes a haircut, and maybe at the end of this year, we have the technology sector is at 20% of the S&P and the energy sector is at 6 or 7%.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you dabbling in tech at all? Well, I'm mentioning this because we have Alphabet earnings out and it looks like they've topped earnings expectations. We've got to go through the details. And a lot of this is about what happens in the conference call too. So, but are you dabbling in tech at all, Tony? Or are you really just concentrated in energy?
Yeah. Like I said to client on a consultation call earlier, I really spent the last year and a half being mostly long natural resources names for the most part, pretty successfully. We were going with the trade very much there, and I had very little else on the books. Now, coming right into January, I came into the start of the year with a retail short on just to sort of hedge myself. And then I added a Twitter short and a triple Q short pretty opportunistically and already took some of those off. But more importantly, I definitely see this as being a year where you need to be short some sectors of the market. Otherwise, the drawdowns in technology are just going to bleed out your energy gains on certain days when the indices are just too beat up for energy stocks to rally that day. So I'm trying to be in those trades so that I can have big days on those days too. And it's just so much harder to trade tech from the short side. I'm a decent bull market trader, and in bull markets, covering shorts is so much more difficult. And I feel like we're still in a bull market, so I'm being careful with it. But you're going to see me take a lot more chances being short technology than I this year than I did last year. So that I'm very much open to that because I think this rotation is violent and real.
Yeah. Awesome stuff. And hopefully that answers a couple different people were asking questions about that as well. And for some of the questions on here, we went over too. So if you join late, go back and rewatch it because we covered uranium and copper and some of those other issues. Tony, fantastic, a mountain of fantastic advice and information. Thank you so much, as always.
Thank you for putting that together, Maggie. That was great.
Now, Ash is going to be here tomorrow with Darius Dale. They can dive into some of these issues as well. And as always, the conversation continues on the exchange. Thanks for posting so many great questions there. We always look there for them. So keep doing it. And in the meantime, take care and good luck out there.
Peace, gang.
What's up, revolutionaries? Thanks for tuning in to the Real Vision Daily Briefing. For more content like this, head over to realvision.com and get unfiltered access to the very best, brightest, and biggest names in finance.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.